You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all the tribes of Israel who are the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, Scandinavian, and Nordic peoples, our brothers and sisters around the world. Notice that the Jews are not included as our brothers and sisters, for they are from Esau. They are the children of the snake. They are not of our tribes. Ladies and gentlemen, the title of this message is The Secret Teachings of Eustace Mullins, Part 3.
Buzz the plane. Buzz the plane. The plane is coming in.
And you say, what does that have to do with anything? Well, it has nothing to do with anything at all. I just thought you might like it. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to, last week, Yahweh, I asked him for scripture, and he gave me the book of Habakkuk. And I read Habakkuk's first complaint. And boy, it really socked it to me. I hope it socked it to you too. So I figured we'd go with Habakkuk's second complaint this week. Yahweh, are you not from everlasting? My God, my Holy One, you will never die. You, Yahweh, have appointed them to execute judgment. You, my rock, have ordained them to punish. Your eyes are too pure to look on evil. Why then do you tolerate? Excuse me, you cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? You have made people like fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls all of them up with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet, and so he rejoices and is glad. Therefore he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? Then they will sweep past like the wind and go on, guilty people, whose own strength is their God. I will stand at my watch and station myself on the ramparts. I will look to see what he will say to me and what answer I am to give to this complaint. Now, before I give Yahweh's answer, let's look at this complaint in a little more detail. Of course, Yahweh is everlasting, of course. And he has appointed men to execute judgment. And his eyes do not look upon evil, especially with favor. So he says, your eyes are too pure to look on evil. You cannot tolerate wrongdoing. Why then do you tolerate the treacherous? Why are you silent while the wicked swallow up those more righteous than themselves? This is sort of part of what happened last week when we were reading it, right? So what he's saying here is you've made people like fish in the sea, like the sea creatures that have no ruler. The wicked foe pulls up all of them with hooks. He catches them in his net. He gathers them up in his dragnet, and so he rejoices. But this is the key here. Therefore, he sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. You see, his net is his god. He sacrifices to his net and burns incense to his dragnet. For by his net, he lives in luxury and enjoys the choicest food. Who does that remind you of today, ladies and gentlemen? It could remind you of nobody else but the Jew. In verse 17, he goes on, is he to keep on emptying his net, destroying nations without mercy? Who is the people that keep destroying nations? Who is destroying all of our nations today as we speak? Who has destroyed all the civilizations in times past? From Rome to Babylon and on, Assyria. I mean, Greece, Egypt, etc. Who has destroyed all those nations? Yes, the Jews, the people of the serpent, the people that don't like to look upon the X because it reminds them of Jesus Christ. Yes, they are and have been known as the Christ killers. No, I don't care what the Pope says. They have not been exonerated from killing Jesus Christ. Who was Yahweh in the flesh? No, they have not been released from that. I don't care what any Pope has to say, because as far as I'm concerned, the Pope is nothing. He's about on the same level as Jews, and they're nothing too. So you can understand Habakkuk's complaints here. But you can also understand that if the people will not obey Yahweh's laws and the people ignore Yahweh and they get fat, dumb, and happy and forget all about who Yahweh is and was and will be, well, then he has to snap and get your attention. And there's several ways of getting your attention, but it seems to be that people will only react to something when it directly affects them. Understandable. But also problematic. But thank God for the watchmen who will stand at their watch and station themselves on the ramparts and tell the people what Yahweh wishes them to know, whether they listen or not. So let's see what Yahweh answers here. Then Yahweh replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. Yes, a herald, a paper, or somebody who's going to blow a horn. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end. Did you get that? For the revelation. See, he says, let me go back again. Yahweh replied, write down the revelation and make it plain on tablets so that a herald may run with it. For the revelation awaits an appointed time. It speaks of the end and will not prove false. Though it linger, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. And ladies and gentlemen, that's good news, because I say that all my brothers and sisters are wondering these same things. When will you react, Yahweh? How much more can you take? But he says, don't worry about that. Just be patient. Though it lingers, wait for it. It will certainly come and will not delay. See, the enemy is, oh, Yahweh's saying it like it is. See, the enemy is puffed up, he's saying to you. His desires are not upright. But the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. Now, is the Jew today puffed up? Oh, yes, he is. He's bragging left and right of all the filth that he's done. He says he's calling for this and he's calling for that, yet I don't want to hear his calls because I'm not interested in what the enemy wants. They can stuff it. His desires are not upright. What does the Jew desire? The Jew desires a society where homosexuality is the norm. The Jew desires a society where women are the heads of corporations. The Jew desires bosses that are homosexuals. The Jew desires to kill our children. The Jew desires to wipe out the Anglo-Saxon people, and then eventually all the other families of the earth too, after he uses them. And I could go on all day what his desires are. You see, because all you have to do is find out what Yahweh desires, and those are not the desires of the Jew. You see, because the Jew desires everything that Yahweh does not look favorable upon. But Yahweh says the righteous person will live by his faithfulness. Indeed, wine betrays him. He is arrogant and never at rest. Okay, we're back to talking about the Jew now. We're not talking about the righteous. Indeed, wine betrays him. He is arrogant and never at rest. Are the Jews ever at rest at counting their money? Are they ever at rest on thinking new ways to kill us? To destroy Christianity? To fill our countries with immigrants, and so on and so on. Do they ever rest from that? Are they arrogant? Have you ever listened to a Jew talk? It doesn't get it any more arrogant than that. Because he is as greedy as the grave, and like death, is never satisfied. Does that sound like the Jew to you? Why? Of course it does. You couldn't have nailed it any better. But Yahweh knows about these people. You see. Now listen, he continues here. He gathers to himself all the nations and takes captive all the peoples. How does he do it? Is the Jew a great warrior and he can gather all the nations to himself and take captive all the peoples? No, the Jew couldn't even, the Jewish, whatever you call them, the Israeli army or whatever they are over there, they couldn't even beat the Dallas cheerleaders in a fight. I hear you laughing out there. Yes, but as funny as it is, it's true. No, the Jew does it through other ways. And you know the way it's done. All you have to do is have a central bank and have control over a nation's currency. And then you can mock the rulers, as it said last week. As long as you're doling out the dough, you'll be the one who's the driving force. Whether it's driving the nation upwards or downwards. However, the Jew only drives nations downwards. How many times has the Jew walked out of a nation that he left stripped, only to move on to the next nation to do the same thing? They are wanderers and vagabonds. This is the curse of Cain. Only problem is that curse of Cain not only affects Cain and his people and his offspring, but it affects us greatly as well, because they follow us everywhere we go. They don't establish these nations. We establish nations. You can see that, and I'm going to keep hammering this into the ground, and I don't care if it's a dead horse or not, 67 years, pretty soon I'll be able to say 68 years. 67 years, and they still don't have that little land over there. Yeah, so they don't establish nations, never have, never will. What they do is they acquire, because Cain means to acquire. Eve acquired Cain, and I'm sure it wasn't a good acquisition or whatever, whatever the word is I'm looking for. It's terrible. It's terrible, and we've acquired Cain and his seed line, and it's just not too much fun. You see, even Yahweh in the flesh had to tell them that they were guilty of all the bloodshed, all the way from Abel to Zacharias. But the next thing you know, his blood was shed by them. You understand? And on and on and on it goes. So Yahweh goes on, will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, woe to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. How long must this go on? Huh? Who gets wealthy by extortion? Who piles up stolen goods? Like with usury? Farms that have been stolen, properties that have been stolen worldwide. Who does that? Who's guilty of that? You can certainly see it's the Jew who's guilty of that. I need not tell you that, but I will tell you that. Just in case there's somebody out there that might not know. If you don't know now, dear listener, you will know. And it goes on, will not your creditors suddenly arise? Will not they wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their prey, because you have plundered many nations. Now that's odd right there. Because it is true, though. The Jew even has creditors. It is true. I love it. They do prey on themselves, too. And they will take themselves down, people in their own. But they'd prefer to take you down first, because there's more pleasure in it, you see? Because you have plundered many nations, the peoples who are left will plunder you. For you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Who does that? Come on, let me hear it. Say it, everybody. The Jew! The Jew! The Jew! The Jew! Yeah! That's who does it. Woe to him who builds his house by unjust gain, setting his nest on high, to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. The stones of the wall will cry out, "Aho!" And the beams of the woodwork will echo it. How interesting. Remember a couple of weeks ago, I read you my poem, The Blood Will Cry. But here, the stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork will echo it. It does make sense. It really does. Because wood is very resonant. Woe to him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by injustice. Has not Yahweh determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of Yahweh as the waters cover the sea. Woe to him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk, so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink and let your nakedness be exposed. The cup from Yahweh's right hand is coming around to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. The violence you have done to Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you. For you have shed human blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Of what value is an idol carved by a craftsman, or an image that teaches lies? For the one who makes it trusts in it, for the one who makes its trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Woe to him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. Yahweh is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. Yes. What do you think of that, ladies and gentlemen? Now let's continue with the secret teachings of Eustace Mullins. We're reading from the Secret Holocaust 1983 version. There were two versions. One can only conjecture whether Wilson, who was never examined for mental problems, despite his many erratic actions culminating in his final breakdown, did not long to be there with his co-religionaires. Now, I know we read this last week, but I'm just, it's a little, we start from here and move on. A League of Honor, which pleasured itself by ripping babies out of their mother's wombs, walking knee-deep in the blood of their victims, ripping out an eye here, a tongue there, hacking off a leg or an arm, in short, trying to be impartial in dealing out Jewish justice to the non-Russian autocrats, whose only fault was that they had been too stupid and too easygoing to protect their homes and families against the invasions by the Jewish terrorist, until it was too late. Alexander Solzhenitsyn relates that some 60 million real Russians have been murdered since the Bolshevik Revolution at the hands of the Yiddish revolutionaries, and now 200 million citizens of the United States await their turn, the abattoirs of the bloodthirsty Zionist terrorists. Reverend Dennis Fahey, in his book, The Rulers of Russia, exposed the real names of the many Jewish terrorists who operated the Soviet murder machine in Russia. Trotsky was Bronstein. Martov was Zederbaum. Zinoviev was Applebaum. That's a hard one to say. Kamenev was Rosenfeld. Oh, do we have a president in the United States that might have had that name? Mr. Rosenfeld or Rosenvelt. Very close, isn't it? Harvest was Helphand. Bohrin was Nathanson, and so on. Many of the White Russians fled toward the Pacific from Vladivostok to the port of Daren. The Russian women, who had presided over the most gracious palaces known to the European civilization, were forced to turn to prostitution to find bread for their starving children. Others, finding the degradation unbearable, committed suicide or slowly starved to death. Decades after the Russian Revolution, some of the White Russian women could still be found in houses of prostitution in Shanghai, Peking, and Tokyo. The male survivors of the Marxist terror, many of them highly cultured scholars, philosophers, and scientists, found no means of support from their highly specialized talents in the harsh Asiatic world of the refugee. One Russian general was seen pulling a rickshaw as a coolie in the Shanghai for a few days. He later hung himself in his barren room. Those who survived in the initial terror in Russia were fated for an even harsher death, a slow agonizing one, as a prisoner in a Jewish-operated concentration camp. Yes, may I remind you that the Jew, when you have them on the ground, they begin to cry, and you remember, they're actors now. I want you to always remember. You always got to keep in mind that the Jew is an actor. No matter if he's the small Jew or the richest Jew, he is an actor. So when he's on the bottom, he will begin to cry to evoke your feelings, like he does with his news, and he will start to cry, Holocaust, oh, the Holocaust, oy vey, the Holocaust, yeah. We heard all that before. But when he's on top, the operator of a Jewish-operated concentration camp, which is a gulag, or what happened in post-World War II Germany, he becomes the tyrant of tyrants and cares nothing about evoking your feelings, only fear. That's the only feeling he really wants to evoke. So for many years, the Jews, through their total control of the media and Christian nations, prevented any word of the horrors which they daily perpetrated on Christians in Soviet Russia from reaching the outside world. Finally, one victim who had survived a sentence in a concentration camp, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, reached safety. In his book, The Gulag Archipelago, he informed an incredulous world that the blood-maddened Jewish terrorists had murdered 60 million victims in Russia from 1918 to 1957. Now, there's even more than were murdered after that as well, but that's just to that point. And who's guilty of that bloodshed, ladies and gentlemen? Who's guilty? Yes, I can hear you now. The Jews. Yes, that's who's guilty. Solzhenitsyn cited Cheka, Order Number 10, issued on January 8, 1921, to intensify the repression of the bourgeoisie. It was this order on which the establishment of terrible Siberian camps, Koliman and many others was based. Solzhenitsyn also brought to the Christian world the names of the mass murderers who ran these camps. All of them were Jews. Typical was one Lazar Kogan, who watched thousands of slave laborers die during his stint as boss of the White Sea Canal construction. He would sometimes remark to a new prisoner, "I believe that you personally were not guilty of anything, but as an educated person, you have to understand that social prophylaxis was being widely applied." Nice fellow, wasn't he? Social prophylaxis was one of the vicious Jewish phrases which they use as euphemisms for their massacre of the Christians. Their victims, once they were consigned to the camps, were no longer considered human, as the Jews considered all others to be non-human. They were known simply by the nickname of Zeks, slang for Zaklacheni. Boy, these people have some wild names, boy. Zaklacheni. Dick Cheney. Zaklacheni, which means prisoner in Russian. The Jews were given another opportunity to massacre helpless Christians during the Spanish Civil War. Ernest Elmhurst states in World Hoax, page 157, of no less significance was the transfer of Soviet Russia's former peace delegate at Geneva, the Jew Rosenberg, Moses Israel John, with his staff of 140 members to the office of Ambassador of Spain in August of 1936. This cadre of highly trained specialists in torture and murder passed over the Reign of Terror, which was largely ignored by the rest of the world, because the journalists covering the Spanish War, Ernest Hemingway, and many others were themselves sympathetic to the communists, and they had sought only to discredit the Spanish patriots, the fascists, as they contemptuously termed them. The Rosenberg murder teams were called World Revolutionary Movement Purification Squads. How do you like that? Their purification consisted mainly of massacres of priests, nuns, choir boys, and women and children, as is so well described in the Book of Esther and the occasion of the Jewish celebration of the Feast of Purim. Arthur Bryant, in his well-documented Communist Atrocities in Spain, tells of one murder squad which went to the Dominican convent in Barcelona and informed the Mother Superior that because of possible mob violence, the nuns should accompany the squad to a place of safety. They were then taken to the suburbs and murdered. Their Jewish leader commented, "We need the building. We didn't want to muss it up before we occupied it." E. M. Godden, in Conflict in Spain, says on page 72, during the last week of July in 1936, the bodies of nuns were exhumed from their graves and propped up outside the walls of their convents. Obscene and offensive placards were attached to their bodies. In Madrid, it was estimated that one-tenth of the population of Spain was murdered by the communist Jews in 1939. Dr. Fontariz, in Red Terror in Madrid, tells how Cheka crews organized by Dmitriev and Rosenberg carried out a program of torture and murder so obscene that it cannot be repeated or described. I want you to pay attention to the Red Terror. The Red Terror. See, these are the seed line of Esau. Esau was red and hairy. He was a white man until he began to race mix with these people. Edom, the land they lived in, was called Edom, means red. You see? And I've told you about these connections before. The Red Terror. I just want you to think about that. You connect the Red Terror with the Jews. What did they call communists? Reds. Why? Because they were Jews. Communism is Judaism. Communism was created by the Jews. You see, I'll explain to you why Karl Marx and the other fellow there created communism. They were told to do this. They were asked to do it. Because what they wanted was an exact opposite to capitalism. So they could play out the Hegelian dialectic as they always do. You see, capitalism would be the thesis, and communism would be the antithesis. And as those two fought one another, there would be this synthesis of the two, which is what we have in America today. It's called democracy. You see, because you've got to realize something that's very important. The Jew is both the capitalist, and the communist. Oh, yes, he is. Now, some of you have already realized that. Some of you already knew that. But I'll bet you a lot of people don't realize that. They are both. This is another reason why they created the Church of Satan. And he was a Jew. So that could be the Christian church would be the thesis, and the Church of Satan would be antithesis. And as they fight one another, the Jews just infiltrate anyway. Freemasonry is the Church of Satan as well. And they are mixing in and have been mixing in with the churches for a very, very long time. There has been a synthesis of the church, the so-called Christian church, and these satanic churches. You see, because Freemasonry is really just a pseudo church. It's the opposite of what Christianity is supposed to be. In the same way as Judaism is the opposite, and those two fight each other, and there's been a synthesis of those. This is why we were told, George Washington was told in a letter, as I had told you a long time ago, that in 200 years, your churches will be teaching the Jews' religion. Is it so, ladies and gentlemen? Are our churches teaching the Jewish religion today? Is it so? Yes, it's so. You people are worshiping the Jew, whether you know it or not. And as you contribute to these so-called Christian churches, see, the Catholics were also going against the Protestants, and there was the Hegelian dialectic there too. And now there's been a synthesis of those. There's no more Protestants. Let me inform you of that. There's no more Protestants. The Catholic Church, they have now all ascribed to the Pope again. I've seen it myself with my own eyes. And all this universalism, they are all melding together. You see, religion is a melting pot. So you are worshiping the Jew. You are spitting in the face of the ever-living God, Yahweh. For when Yeshua, Yahweh in the flesh, was here, he had nothing good to say about these people. He executed judgment on them and foretold us what was going to happen, and he told it like it was. And you say that's not true. You're in contradiction with the ever-living God if you are in these churches in this day. You may think you're going to church. You may think you know who God is. You may think that you are giving to God's kingdom. You may think that you're doing the right thing. You may be appeasing your guilty conscience and really believing that you are, but you are doing none of those things. You are spitting in the face of the ever-living God. You are spitting on the cross of Christ. You have made it null and void in your life and in others' lives because of it. If you are supporting and putting money into the plates of those churches, what you are doing is supporting Yahweh's enemies. And I don't just mean the Jews, I mean the preachers that are preaching this false doctrine. These devils, these doctrines of devils that are being preached to you, you are supporting these doctrines of devils and keeping them alive and keeping the beast functioning week by week. And if you continue to do this, You will be null and void. And your name will be ripped out of the book of life. It will be erased, ladies and gentlemen. You better start getting fearful of Yahweh. You better start to fear him. You've been made fools out of. You just don't realize that. And may Yahweh make you realize it. But you better get your ego out of the way, and you better get your unteachable arrogance out of the way so that he can get in there and do some repair work. Stop supporting the enemies of Yahweh. Stop spitting in the ever-living God's face, and stop making what Christ did on the cross of null and void in your life, not in my life, in your life or lives. Now that's some good advice. Sorry I have to deliver it in such a firm manner, but I don't see any other way to get through to you people. You people, I don't know if you need a slap in the face to wake you up. I don't know what it is, what you need to wake you out of this. But maybe if I talk to you like this, you might hate me. I don't care about that at all. But maybe I have penetrated your cranial cavity. And that's more important. Maybe you'll remember what I said to you this very day. And maybe, just maybe, you'll begin to seek the truth. And the truth will set you free. Instead of relying on somebody else to hold your hand. Are you one of these men today that need mommy to do your laundry? Huh? It's time. It's never been more time than it is now. We need men to be men. And why do we need men to be men? To be an example to the children. To be an example to the Jew. To be an example to the other families of the earth. Being fat, dumb, and happy, and allowing somebody else to lead you right into the bowels of hell is not going to cut it, sonny boy. You're just not going to get away with sitting back and relaxing and hiding on the top of the fence, hoping nobody will see you. We're going to drag you off the fence. And if you don't like it on the right side, you can get yourself right over on the other side, and we won't pay any more attention to you. You won't have to listen to any more of my teachings or speaking. And you can go listen back to your little preacher there and support him every week while he tickles your little earlobes and tickles your ears. Be a man, Israelite. Okay, so to further their world murder plan, the Jews have occasionally allowed a few of their numbers to be sacrificed. See what I mean? This was brought out at the meeting in Rothschild's home in 1773 when it was stated, "But it has paid us even though we have sacrificed many of our own people. Each victim on our side is worth 1,000 goyim." What the speaker meant was that if one Jew happens to be killed, he will be avenged by the death of 1,000 Christians, or cattle, as the Christians are derisively referred to by the Jewish cult. The speaker went on to point out his rapt listeners that we are interested in just the opposite, in the diminution of the killing out of the goyim. And the record of this meeting in Rothschild's house survived how? Certainly no murder plan had ever previously been so meticulously laid out or so precisely put into operation. The figures are in, and they are indisputable. 50 million victims in World War I, 150 million victims in World War II, 60 million Christians murdered by Jewish fanatics in Russia since the success of the Bolshevik Revolution. Many, if not the majority, of these victims of Jewish terrorism were women and children. Millions of them perished of starvation and exposure in campaigns of communist expulsion from their homes. And ladies and gentlemen, let's not forget about abortion. You can add that figure in year after year after year. It certainly adds up. And it adds up that in about the last 150 years, we've lost about two-thirds of our people.
Geez, I just noticed. I'm just noticing now that there's less people, white people, out on the sidewalks.
Yeah. Typical was the expulsion of the Sudeten Germans from Czechoslovakia after World War II, during which more than 1 million Germans died, and the expulsion of the Germans from Poland, a horrifying trek which cost the lives of 2 million Germans. These Jews especially delighted in the deaths of these millions of Christian refugees, since the manner of death fulfilled the most cherished doctrine of the Jewish hatred of all Christians, that non-Jews, being considered as non-humans or cattle, in the Jewish term goyim, are not to be buried. This is a violation of Jewish law, which prohibits animals from being buried. These millions of Christian refugees lay where they fell during the terrible communist expulsions and never received Christian burial. Early in World War II, the communists delighted in the opportunity to indulge in their favorite sport of mass murder. During the first days of the war, 15,000 Polish officers who were the flower of the nation were captured. They were taken to three Jewish-operated communist camps, Starobiesk, Kozelsk, and Ostashkov. Only 448 were ever seen alive again. The rest vanished, but not without trace. The Kozelsk camp was situated in the grounds of a former Orthodox monastery, 5 miles from Kozelsk. 5 miles from the Kozelsk railway station in this camp. About 5,000 were sent away in small groups, the process continuing until April 1940. Parfion Kislev said that in the spring of 1940, prisoners were brought to the Katyn Forest in 3 or 4 buses daily. From his house, he heard shots and shouts. It was rumored that 10,000 Poles were shot there. When the German army occupied the area in 1943, an investigation was begun. The final report of the German police stated on June 10th, 1943, that it was proved that without exception, death was caused by a shot in the back of the neck. You see what kind of people these Jews are? They shot him in the back of the neck. More proofs that the Jews are cowards. A. The 7 mass graves of murdered Polish officers, which have been cleared, cover a relatively small area. From the translation of diaries, of memoirs, and other notes found with the bodies, it was proved that the officers who had been taken prisoner by the Soviet Army in 1939 were sent to various camps, Kozelsk, Starobiesk, and Ostashkov. Say that 10 times quick. Boy, I'll tell you. Hutaviel, Bolotov, Pavlishev, Bor, Shepyatovka, wow, that was a good one, Gorodok. The majority of those killed in the Katyn Forest had been in the Kolzelski camp. From the end of March until the first day of May 1940, the prisoners from Kolsiysk arrived by rail. The exact dates cannot be established. A few short intervals apart, a batch left almost every day. The number of prisoners varied between 100 and 300 persons. Thence, in the early morning, the prisoners proceeded in special lorries to the Katyn Forest. Lorries are trucks. There are officers. There the officers were immediately shot, thrown into the waiting graves and buried. And as may be seen from the evidence of witness Kisilev, who has seen the ditches being prepared, that the shooting took place immediately after the arrival of a batch of prisoners is proved by witnesses who heard shots after every such arrival. There was no accommodation in the forest apart with the rest house, which was a limited capacity. From the position of the bodies, it may be assumed that the majority were murdered outside the graves. Very many of the dead men had their hands tied behind their backs. The evidence of witnesses confirms that access to the forest was forbidden. Voss, Secretary of the Field Police. You see, the cruelty of these people, they know no bounds. They don't care. They love to shed blood. And I want you to understand that what you're hearing right now is the very thing they want to do in the United States of America to us, to you, dear Christian. Yes, these Jews that you love and worship so much and believe that they're God's chosen people, they want to kill you too. You say you don't believe it? You will if they ever get a chance. Why do you think all this gun rhetoric is going on? Why do you think they're playing problem reaction solution with the guns? They want to take the guns away. If they get the guns away, you will find this to be true and you will die. Now, I should mention, and I should mention it every chance I get, the Dick Act of 1902. Look it up. I'll do a show on it one sometime soon. And you need to be aware of it. Everybody needs to be aware of it. Gun control laws are illegal. All those so-called gun control laws that they've written since 1902, all illegal, all null and void. They cannot be modified. Find out about the Dick Act of 1902. The Dick Act of 1902. The Dick Act of 1902. Professor Butt's report stated, documents found on the victims, identity cards, but not military passports, diaries, letters, postcards, calendars, photographs, drawings, etc., gave the names, age, profession, origin, and family relations of the victims. Pathetic entries in the diaries testify to the treatment of the victims by the NKVD. Letters and postcards from relatives in Upper Silesia, in the general government, and in Russian-occupied zones, written to judge the post office stamps, between autumn 1939 and March or April 1940, clearly point to the time of the crime, spring 1940. So they could actually find that out by the cards they had on them when they were mailed. Don't you just love it? Yahweh finds a way to show who the true criminals are. You see, they tried to blame the Germans for the Katyn Forest murders, as they tried to blame the Germans for everything. The Katyn case came before Nuremberg Tribunal as part of the general trial of German war criminals. The Soviets, having claimed this atrocity had been committed by the Germans, although it was on the agenda, the Soviets omitted it from the judgment. nor was any Pole allowed to testify about it. Yeah, you know why? Because the Germans would have been exonerated immediately. Mr. G.F. Hudson wrote in the Quarterly International Affairs, "The unquiet dead of Katyn still walk the earth. In subsequent years, a number of congressmen have sought to reopen the case, including the Honorable George A. Dondero, Honorable Ray Madden, and others. A U.S. Congressional Select Committee, 2nd July 1952, reported that the committee unanimously agrees that evidence dealing with the first phase of its investigation proves conclusively and irrevocably that the Soviet NKVD, People's Commissariat of International Affairs, committed the massacre of Polish army officers in the Katyn Forest near Smolensk, Russia, not later than the spring of 1940. The committee further concludes that the Soviets had plotted this criminal extermination of Poland's intellectual leadership as early as the fall of 1939, shortly after Russia's treacherous invasion of the Polish nation's borders. There can be no doubt that this massacre was a calculated plot to eliminate all Polish leaders who subsequently would have opposed the Soviets' plan for communizing Poland. The end of World War II gave the communists the opportunity to wreak revenge on all who had opposed them during the war. As a result, let me tell you something. There is nobody, no people of the world that have more desire to revenge than the Jews. The Jews wanted revenge on Babylon, and they actually helped the downfall of Babylon, in case you don't know it. But not only that, by committing the atrocity of 9/11, they were able to help the fall of Babylon again, which is Iraq. So, we're talking about their revenge. As a result, from 2 to 5 million victims were massacred by Jewish terrorists in France, Italy, Czechoslovakia, and other countries in which the communists were allowed by their allies to murder at will all anti-communists or fascists. The Sunday Oklahoman shed some light on this horror. January 21st, 1973. Document tells Allied part in deaths of thousands. A former White House consultant has provided the Sunday Oklahoman with a secret document exposing for the first time what appears to be Allied complicity in the deaths of thousands of unsuspecting liberated prisoners of war and displaced persons after World War II. Oh, that's a real surprise. There's more of our atrocities. You see, this is why our so-called military men of World War II are no heroes at all. They're war criminals. Not all of them, but the ones who did this and the ones who allowed this to happen in Germany. Does this sound familiar to you? The document, a 10-page British Army report, is believed to be part of voluminous Anglo-American files on the forcible repatriation to the Soviet Union of an estimated 2 to 5 million unwilling anti-communists between 1944 and 1948. The files, codenamed Operation Keyhole, are still kept under tight security in London and Washington as virtually the last major secret of World War II. The secret British report summarizes one repatriation operation in Italy in which Russian POWs and DIs were turned over to the Red Army and almost certain execution after being duped by the British into believing that they would be given asylum in the West. That's betrayal, ladies and gentlemen, and that is just, there's no excuse for it. It tells of the agony and the horror experienced by these prisoners. The leading criminal in the mass execution of 2 to 5 million anti-communists was, who else, our grinning Ike. There he is again. The Swedish Jew, the terrible Swedish Jew who hates Germans, whose mother was a mulatto. Yes, he's a Falasha Jew. Head of the European sector for the Allied armies, or as you may know him, our former President Eisenhower. Another so-called hero who will rot in the bowels of hell forever. Praise be to Yahweh. There's one Jew that's off this planet that needed to be off this planet real quick. The crime of Operation Keyhole was not on the agenda at Nuremberg. Thank God Yahweh takes care of these things. I cannot wait until he comes and brings the real Holocaust. I cannot wait to be free from this horrible Jewish run world. To finance the state of Israel, which was created as a direct result of the Jewish victory over the Christian nations in World War II, Jews who had committed all the atrocities now imposed enormous reparations demands on the conquered German people. To date, they have extorted. Do we remember that from Habakkuk? They have extorted more than $35 billion from German workers, money which has been collected at the points of bayonets, not Jewish bayonets, but on the bayonets of the American army. There's our heroes. Those are our boys. Aren't you proud, mother, of your son who was in the American army? He's a hero. Which has been maintained as an occupying force in West Germany for nearly four decades, solely to provide military power behind the puppet German government, which has its primary function, the furnishing of money for the parasitic state of Israel. Some 20 years after World War II, the Jews began to fear that scholars might focus on the terrible massacres of women and children during that war by armies directed by the Jews. The incineration of thousands of families by mass firebombings on the cities of Cologne, Hamburg, Berlin, Dresden, and other European cultural centers. You see, they were guilty, and they made us American and British airmen guilty of holocausting the Germans. See, these were real Holocaust, not the fake one like the Jews say. None of them were burnt to a cinder. Go find out what happened to these cities, Cologne, Hamburg, Berlin, Dresden. You will see people charcoaled right down to nothing left. That's what a Holocaust is, to be wholly burnt. So Dresden and other European cultural centers, the firestorms which killed many thousands of families in Tokyo, as well as the nuclear holocausts unleashed on civilian populations at Hiroshima and Nagasaki in the last days of the Japanese war. When the imperial staff was already suing for peace, the Jews did not want to lose this opportunity to test their new Jewish hell bomb on human targets. Yes. These and their numerous other war crimes began to concern the Jews. Their guilt was inescapable. It seemed a mere matter of time till their crimes would call down retribution on their heads. To forestall this possibility, the Jews began a furious campaign of their own, the highly synchronized. See, this is what I said, and here it is being told to you right there. I told you they created this story to counter what they had done because they were afraid of what they had done. And this is exactly why it was made. That's why you know it's a lying story. It's not, it's just a story. It's not real. Their guilt was inescapable. It seemed a mere matter of time until their crimes would call down retribution on their heads. To forestall this possibility, the Jews began a furious campaign of their own, a highly synchronized and coordinated worldwide campaign publicizing their new myth, the Holocaust, in which 6 million Jews were said to have been burned. 6 million Jews were also said to have been gassed. Oh, yes. Whether this meant that there were actually 12 million Jews killed, no one seems to know. The Holocausts, or mass murders by fire occurring during World War II, was a matter of historical record. There existed photographs of stacks of burned corpses, which had been made in Cologne, Hamburg, and Dresden after the mass firing bombings of those cities by Allied aircraft. Yes, the good guys. That's us, the good guys, you see? See, we were bombing the axis of evil, see? Because we're the good guys. We torture people, and we Holocaust people. We're the good guys, the heroes. We make treaties about and agreements about how we'll treat people during wartime, and only we break them. But we're the good guys. I just wanted you to know that. How does it feel to be one of the good guys? The problem the Jews faced was that there had been no Holocaust of Jewish victims during World War II, nor were there any photographs of burned Jewish bodies. Not to worry, the Jews simply appropriated the photographs and bodies of their German victims, as well as, I may say, as well as their Russian victims, which are exhibited today in gruesome museums in Germany as exhibits of dead Jews. Yes, lies, complete lies, that's all it is. It was a matter of record that the Jews had actually done quite well during World War II. In Germany, incredible sagas of bribery and corruption on the home front had secured the mass evacuation of all Jews from German cities just before the firebombings began. When entire German families perished amid scenes of unspeakable horror, the Jews were safely ensconced in comfortable quarters in such refugee camps as Auschwitz. The ultimate testimony as to their rescue by being segregated to these remote camps, far from the danger of mass bombing raids, coming from who else? The Jews themselves. As they never ceased to assure us, they survived. Although they survived amidst scenes of genocide or massacres of non-Jews in many countries, they realized several decades later that it was necessary for their purposes to claim that they had been exterminated. The protection camps in which they had been safely segregated by the Germans during World War II now became death camps. Not only were they death camps, but they were camps such as Auschwitz, memorialized in the Atlantic Monthly, September 1981, is having its own soccer stadium, its own library, its own photo lab, and its own symphony orchestra, as we have mentioned to you before. Nice, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen? How do you like these stories? How do you like hearing the truth about what happened rather than the foolish stories that you've believed all your life? The same article proudly boasts that the hospital at Auschwitz grew to a considerable size, with about 20 doctors and more than 300 nurses. Ooh, German nurses. This was a death camp. The fact was that there was not a single German military field hospital near any combat front as sizable or as well as equipped as the hospital at the death camp, quote, of Auschwitz. Yet Auschwitz is always cited by the Jews as the place where millions of Jews were put to death. The purpose of the large modern hospital has never been satisfactorily explained, since the Jews now claim that within hours after arriving in Auschwitz, the Jews were hurried into gas chambers. Now, what does that sound like? Does that not sound like what the Jews did to the Poles in the Katyn Forest? See? They arrived and they were immediately killed. Just, you know, a couple of hours here, but I mean, they arrived and they were immediately gassed and killed. Like as if you could burn somebody to death and get rid of all their bones and everything and just do like, you know, hundreds and thousands of them at a time. Sure, sure. This claim might have more validity had it not been for one unfortunate oversight by the Jews. They did not build the gas chambers at Auschwitz until after World War II had ended, almost 40 years after the war, in which 6 million Jews were murdered by the Nazis. As they claim, there are annual festivals, conventions, and other mass gatherings of many thousands of survivors of death camps. Even more peculiar, hardly any of these prosperous, healthy, and well-fed victims claims to have been the survivor of only one death camp. Nearly all of them claim to have been a prisoner in 5 or 6 of the camps. This at a time when Germany, fighting a two-front war, could not keep its troops supplied in the combat areas. The Jews ask us to believe that every few months they were transferred from one camp, put on a train, and carried hundreds of miles to another death camp to be killed. And then a few months later, apparently not having been killed, they were entrained yet to another death camp where they remained without being harmed until the end of the war. The reason for the otherwise inexplicable claims of the Jewish survivors that they were in many different death camps is revealed by a simple explanation: Geld. The survivors regularly receive monthly payments from the conquered Germans. Garfinkel receives a monthly payment in Israel from Germany because he was a prisoner at Auschwitz. Rosenfeld receives a monthly payment from Germany in Israel because he was a prisoner in Treblinka. Steinberg receives a regular monthly payment in Israel from Germany because he was a prisoner at Dachau. Garfinkel, Steinberg, and Rosenfeld. You don't know them. You don't know them? He says. He's the same fat grinning Jew you saw in the news coverage of the Holocaust Convention. Beware of the fables of the Jews, Titus 1:14. The myth of the Holocaust, or the vanished 6 million Jews, is not solely a matter of collecting revenue from the defeated enemies. It is also one of the most powerful weapons of propaganda in the hands of the Jews in their drive for total world power. Today, all officials seeking to continue in office or to seek higher office in the United States must not only make a ritual pledge of eternal and unquestioning faith in the myth of the Holocaust. To question the myth of the Holocaust means a challenge to the Jewish world dictatorship, and it must be punished at once by the most severe sentence. Thus, the most fantastic elaborations on the basic lie of the 6 million appear regularly on American religious programs, in educational books, and in the press. Among the rare public figures who have dared to question the myth of the Holocaust are such individuals as the actor Robert Mitchum, who told an Esquire interviewer in a response to a question about the 6 million, so the Jews say, shrieked the horrified interviewer. Yeah, growled Mitchum, so the Jews say. Another actor, Ronald Reagan, while seeking public office, told a Jewish audience in California that it might help your cause if you would limit your claims of victims to numbers that you could actually prove. A reporter noted that the audience began to hiss like geese in a rapidly rising cacophony, while the aspiring politician dashed to the wings, never to reappear in the particular auditorium. Whatever Reagan's doubts about the 6 million, he has since kept to himself. The Reagan administration will be remembered for the ultimate enshrinement of the final solution. Two government buildings on the Washington Mall have now been given our government to the Jews for a Holocaust. The Washington Mall, like the Roman Forum, is the center of American aspirations for our republic and runs from the White House to the Capitol. And with its principal adornment, the magnificent Washington Monument, to the consternation of most Americans, the Washington Monument can now be called Jew Alley. Many native Washingtonians have begun to express criticism of this amazing development. In the Washington Post, April 25, 1983, William Raspberry writes on the editorial page, "I simply don't understand it." He points out that also this to be an official American monument, neither the perpetrators nor the victims were Americans. He quotes a Howard University professor as wondering why there shouldn't be a slavery memorial on the mall to honor the memory of the slaves. Would there be any white people on that? Because there were white slaves. I don't think there would. Do you, dear listener? Or a wounded knee memorial for the Indians. Yes. What he doesn't say is that the erection of a Jewish memorial on the Washington Mall is a boast of absolute power, that the Jews have achieved absolute power over their goyim slaves in America. We can understand that there is a huge memorial to Karl Marx erected in Red Square in Moscow. Are we incapable of understanding why a memorial to the Jews is erected on the Washington Mall? Raspberry, who is black, goes on to tweak his big noses of his Jewish employers, the Meyer family, who own the Washington Post, by saying that a pledge that nothing of this sort will ever be permitted to happen again worries him because it is happening right now. He doesn't mention the obvious example, the Rosh Hashanah massacre of Arab women and children in Lebanon, but of course Raspberry fails to understand two crucial factors. First, that it never happened at all, and second, that the Jews are attempting to place the rest of the world on notice that the chosen people are sacred and that no one must ever harm a hair on their heads. It's quite all right to massacre all the goyim or non-Jewish cattle in Cambodia, Vietnam, Africa, or Lebanon. This has nothing to do with the sacred presence of the Jew. Folks, this is, you know, it's amazing. I have to say that how long do we let this go on? How much longer do we allow this nonsense to continue? I mean, I'm filled up to here with it. You understand? Now, there was some more in this book, but I think you get the gist. I think that that's about as far as I need to go on that. These people are the most cruel, hateful, deceiving, destructive, and you can go on and on and on and on. They are the bottom of the barrel. The Jew has been known as a troubling people in all the civilizations of the world. They were a trouble in Rome. Marcus Aurelius said so. They were a trouble everywhere that they have ever been. They're a trouble in America. Judge for yourself. Germany allowed these Jews in their country, gave them full citizenship. Now, that was a mistake because you're asking for Yahweh's judgment by blessing the enemies of Yahweh. However, what happened to Germany? While all other nations shunned them, and I'm not even talking about the United States, the United States is a parallel of Germany. They came here. We didn't invite them here, but we also let them have citizenship. And there is very little persecution of the Jews. Well, it's going to start now, though, because the Muslims are here. But You let them in your nation, and pretty soon they want to gain control of your government, change all of your laws, destroy Christianity, destroy the monuments of your people, destroy your art, bring in burlesques and filthy magazines, bring in Negroes to destroy you. They did this to Germany. So this is a people, over and over and over and over, it's been testified that they will repay good with evil. You do good to them, and I guarantee you they'll repay you evil. So whether you do good to them or bad to them, they'll repay you evil. Either way. Just take a look at America right now, because it parallels Germany. If you know anybody who was alive at that time, ask them if you think it looks like what happened in Germany, in America now. Now, we've had civil wars, and now I don't like these statues anyway, so I don't care if they want to take the statues down, because they're doing us a favor anyway. Because we're not supposed to have statues. But I'm just talking about the principle of things. They've destroyed our art. We used to have beautiful music in America. They've destroyed it. We don't have beautiful songs in America anymore. Our streets are looking like ghettos. When our streets used to be beautiful. The art used to be real art. Now it's a cacophony of its own, a cacophony of colors instead of sound. So they come in and they want to change all these things, all these, if we said this is General Washington Square, they want to change it to, some communist name square or something instead, you know what I mean? I mean, they want to change, they come in your country and you allowed them there, and they want to destroy everything about your country. And come in and just say, you have no rights here. In other words, you allowed them to come in, gave them rights, and then when they're in, they get in control, and then they begin to tell you, you have no rights. Now, that has happened over and over and over again, has it not? I mean, after all, they've got it to the point now where some guy walks over the border and he's got just as much rights as you. Now, I don't agree with that, but that's the way they're portraying it to be. Is that right? Is that the way it should be? Do the Caucasian people have the right to live by themselves and to flourish and have children and enjoy their lives? Or do we need to bring people in here that we have to support and put diapers on because they can't take care of themselves? That's not our responsibility. The blacks are not our responsibility. The Mexicans are not our responsibility. And because the Jews have stolen all the corporations, they illegally hire all these people because, of course, they're Jews. They want they hire people, and they now there's no jobs for the Americans because they don't want to pay us what we deserve. They'd rather pay a Mexican or somebody that will take half the money. So they, through the Federal Reserve, they printed up as much money as they wanted, and they stole all the corporations. And then they stole into the government, and they made the taxes so high that even the Jews will move their corporations out of America. And this has happened to the UK. This has happened all over the place. We used to have big, big industry in America. We don't have hardly anything anymore. So this is what happens when you let these people into your country. They're not grateful, just like the blacks are not grateful. You see what's going on in Europe? They don't like the food or something. They don't like the tents. They're not grateful. And the blacks in our country are not grateful. You'd think that they would say, geez, that is nice of the white people to support us and to let me sit home all day while they go out and work. No. We owe them. That's what the Jew told them. The days of this is going to come to an end, though. As Yahweh said in the beginning of this, though it lingers, it will come. So hold your horses and do the best you can to follow Yahweh's laws and seek the truth that you may be set free, the truth of Yahweh and his word. You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James. Until next time, study to show thyself approved.
The plane, boss, the plane. Ah, the plane. It's time to make the donuts, boss. It's time to make it.
Tune in tomorrow. Same cat time, same cat channel.
To the Batmobile. This could be the break we've been looking for.
Oh, Catwoman. Catwoman, will you never learn?
So you didn't tell the truth.
You ever hear of a crook who did?
You filthy criminies.
It doesn't pay to court disaster, Robin. She's playing right into our hands. I planned it all this way.
You're listening to the Euro Folk Radio Network here at EuroFolkRadio.com.